Hello. Thank you for joining me today. My name is Naveen Swami. I am a software developer at Amazon contributing to the Apache MXNet project. Tim already gave a nice introduction to MXNet. Some of it might be just repeating. Today, I want to talk briefly about deep learning, just some concepts, and then I'll talk about our framework, Apache MXNet. And finally, topic of today, distributed inference using MXNet and Spark. So let's get started. How many of you know the difference between machine learning and deep learning? I can easily skip this slide. We can go for an early coffee break if you know. OK, not many hands going up. So I'll try to summarize briefly. Like you all know, machine learning is about learning patterns using algorithms and making decisions. In traditional machine learning, you had to go through a phase of feature extraction before you could use algorithms on data to make predictions. This was often involved. You needed an expert in the domain, like in clothing, if you wanted to derive recommendations, you wanted a domain expert who understands what are the salient features in clothes and extract those features and feed it to the algorithm. So this was obviously expensive and also not scalable to new problems. So deep learning tries to solve this problem differently by it starts to learn concepts from experience in terms of layers of concepts and building a hierarchy of knowledge in the system. Take this example where you have the task here is to do image classification, in which you have to find the most prominent object in the image from the predefined set of classes. In deep learning, you have an input layer where you feed the input pixels, often colored RGB colors into this, and you have a first hidden layer which is trying to make sense of edges. Here. The layers between input and output are called hidden because the values are not determined by the input. It learns through experience in the process and tries to find the relationship between input and output. So in the next hidden layer, you have it's trying to find corners and contours. In the next one, probably trying to understand object parts. And finally, you have the output layer that gives you the object identity. Here, each layer is trying to learn a level of abstraction, and as it goes up and deeper, it tries to learn more and more abstract concepts in the network from the data. One thing to note here is that the word deep in deep learning doesn't mean that it's trying to gain deeper understanding. It just means that the number of layers is really large. Usually, it's called the depth of the network. So deep learning dates back to 1940s. A few things happened in the last 5 to 10 years that actually changed the landscape of deep learning. The first one is abundance of data. With everyday digitization, it's never been easier to collect data and analyze. And so with lots and lots of data, you can create deeper and deeper network that tries to find patterns in your data. And there was high-performance compute. Here I mean GPUs, which often has hundreds of cores capable of running thousands of threads. This is important because if you look deep down in a neural network, most of the operations are linear algebraic operations that can be heavily optimized. In 2009, researchers started using GPUs in their experiments. Suddenly, they were able to create 10 to 20 times bigger networks and much faster. So this led to faster experimentation. They could run many experiments to come up with newer networks. Lastly, this is a very fast evolving field. You can see papers published every day, almost tens of them. Even small algorithmic advances makes the learning process faster. To that extent, in 2012, Alex Krivosky from Jeffrey Hinton's lab, not too far away from here, he came up with a proposed deep learning neural network model, which suddenly was able to get 30% more accurate from the state-of-the-art model to that date. And since then, deep learning researchers have gotten more and more excited and started building newer types of models. All of this leads to bigger and better models. Obviously, we get better AI products, right, in personal assistants to translation apps, autonomous vehicles, or there are companies that are taking deep learning into the healthcare domain. This one in particular, HeartFlow, is assisting physicians to early diagnose heart diseases. And then there is AlphaGo Zero, which tried to, which actually mastered the greatest intellectual game, Go, just by playing against itself. It didn't need any expert data. To give you a perspective of the complexity of this game, this is a board game. The number of configurations on this board game is more than the number of atoms in the universe. That's more than 10 to the power 80. So players here just learned intuitively and were playing intuitively. And this game, this system was able to learn the Go game and was able to defeat the world's Go champion by 100 to 0. So I hope you're convinced that deep learning is here to stay and it's a big deal. Let's see where it falls into this category, broader category of AI. AI was actually, the focus was to develop this cognitive capabilities of humans to reason and think. And many machine learning systems have come to achieve this. Early machine learning systems tried to solve this problem where it was harder for humans, but easier for machines and could be expressed as formal mathematical rules. It was, machine learning is obviously an area which blends many different fields, algorithmic, computer science, statistics, and engineering disciplines. And deep learning, which is a subset of machine learning, it tried to solve problems, like I said, which is easier for humans, but harder for machines. And you cannot express them easily as mathematical rules. Whether deep learning is trying to achieve true AI is really debatable. And I was reading an article by Michael Jordan. He's a professor in UC Berkeley. He summed it up very nicely. He says what deep learning focuses today is a narrow subset of what human mind is really capable of. And also, what deep learning is actually intelligence assistant, IA, instead of AI. That was a very nice way to sum up all the progress. Despite all of this progress, there are some limitations in deep learning. One of them is that it requires lots of data, thereby compute power. It said that data is cheap today, but where deep learning has demonstrated success is something called supervised learning, which needs labeled data, and that needs humans to label the data, and that's most often it's very expensive or sometimes just impossible. It cannot detect inherent bias in data. Imagine deploying these decision-making systems in a large scale, that if it was trained with data that had bias, that's just a disaster awaiting. And sometimes you cannot understand why certain models work very well. You can only hypothesize after the fact. So that's another concern in deep learning. Let's see the different phases in deep learning. It has two phases. The first one is training, where you have this labeled data or unlabeled data. You feed through the network, and you at the end you verify whether your input, your predicted output is close to your expected output. If not, you find the error, and then you will send it back through the network. Consider this very dummy network. It doesn't do much, but it's only for illustration. What you do is you take data, x1, x2 is your input layer, h1, h2, that layer forms the hidden layer, and you have an output layer. You pass in your data through the network from your data set, and then you At the end, you have a objective function and an associated loss function that's trying to find out how close you are from the expected output. If you don't, if you find it's not close to the expected output, you send back the error by repeatedly finding gradients and updating weights. You update such that it gets closer. It reduces the loss function. This is also called backward pass, and this is where the real learning happens in deep learning. So you do it many, many times, and then you get a trained model that actually meets your objective. And the next phase is obviously to put this into use. So you have your pre-trained model. You take that and you feed it new unseen data. This is also just running a forward pass. You do this, you can run inference in two different modes. One is real time when you want to get immediate results such as fraud detection. And then you have batch inference where you want to do pre-computations for recommender systems which have very low latency requirements. It's within a blink of a second, your users go away from the website. So here you want to have all your recommendations pre-computed and ready to show. Another one is backfilling your data with state-of-the-art models. And if you want to test new models on historic data, how well it does, if it has generalized, that's another area where you want to run in batch inference mode. Let's look at a few types of learning where deep learning has been very successful. I mentioned about supervised learning. Here, you feed the system labeled data and tell the computer program what semantic content it represents. For example, if you're feeding images and if you feed an image of a dog, you tell it, hey, it's a dog and not a cat. So it learns by associating input to output. This is very popular and it's used in image classification, in self-driving cars, and speech recognition, and machine translation. Unsupervised learning is a type of learning where you have raw data, takes raw data, and it's trying to learn patterns from it. Such examples include clustering, for example, topic modeling on documents. When you don't know, you're trying to gather all the documents together that talk about the same topic. Association discovery is another one. Active learning, it's a blend of supervised and unsupervised learning. You have a human in the middle. This tries to learn from raw data. When it is not certain what to do, it queries a human who is for labeled data and continues from there. Reinforcement learning is gaining a lot of traction these days, where in robotics, it learns from the environment using rewards and feedback. So I just covered briefly deep learning concepts, and now I'm going to talk about our framework, Apache MXNet. A little bit of background. It's an Apache incubating project. It's open source, truly open source. And it's a framework similar to PyTorch and TensorFlow for building and training deep learning neural nets. It started in academia by PhD students in CMU and University of Washington. And now in 2016 November, AWS chose this as a framework of choice for developing deep neural networks because of its scalability scalability features and also ease of use. The next obvious question would be why do I use MXNet? And I have many. I've listed a few here. The first is it offers very simple syntax like Tim was mentioning in the previous session, and it supports multiple languages. We have about seven different programming languages, so you don't have to learn a new language. You can choose one that works from Julia, R, Scala, and we recently added Clojure, Python, Perl, if you're a fan of regex expressions. Somebody put in Perl as a binding for it, and the community is working on Java APIs as well. Then you can develop highly portable models that's very efficient, and you can run it on your cell phones or IoT devices, and Tim showed a few examples. GPUs are very expensive, and when you scale, when you add more and more GPUs, you want your framework to make the best use of all the resources you have. And so with MXNet, it achieves almost linear scaling. That's as you add more GPUs, the learning gets shorter and your learning speed increases linearly. It's truly open source. It's not controlled by one vendor, unlike other deep learning frameworks. It's under Apache, so you become users, you turn into contributors, and start. You can also be a part of making how the project goes through. And then there is Onyx support. Who knows what is Onyx? How many of you know about it? Okay, for others, it's open neural network exchange format. You spend a lot of time, sometimes hours, days, and weeks to develop these models. You don't want to be, you know, tightly bound to a framework that you choose today. So what Onyx does is it's a intermediate representation of this model. So you can develop models in one framework and take it to another framework and run it for inference and port it wherever you want. This is an open source initiative by Microsoft, Amazon, and Facebook together. So MXNet supports Onyx out of the box. You can import Onyx models. That also opens up a wide variety of models that you can bring from other frameworks. Then there is Gluon. This is another open source initiative by Amazon and Microsoft together to simplify the APIs for neural networks. And MXNet implements these APIs and also optimizes. You can now write imperative programs like your regular sequential programs. You can attach a debugger or log statements and find out what exactly the weights are. And also, Gluon MXNet on the back end optimizes your imperative program to generate a very highly optimized symbolic graph that it caches. And you can, if you want to run it in production in using for inference, you can just take that symbol and deploy it without losing any performance. If that's not enough, this is one small video where customers are using. Hope you can hear. Can you hear? Let me try to fix that in a second. Does this have speakers? Just a second. Should be there.
And then make sure the audio is on headphones, yeah.
Okay. All right, let's watch this small video how customers are using.
So I took the detection model and combined it with tracking software to track waffle fries going through the production.
There you go. MXNet delivers fresh fries for you. So though the project is incubating, there are many enterprises that are using in their production use cases, and these are some of them. We have TuSimple, which is using in their self-driving cars, and we have Curalate, which is trying to help the customers tag products in social media, and many others. Obviously, we have AWS using in their AI services. Let's look at a few concepts in MXNet. The first one is NDRA, which provides a multidimensional array, which provides tensor operations that work very well both on CPU and GPU. And then there is symbolic APIs, which is a complement API of NDRA. This is similar to NDRA, but it takes a slightly different approach. It takes declarative programming style for optimization reasons. We can see an example here where the simple operation d equal to C plus 1 and C is B star A. If it was used in NDRA, you would just the computation happens as the system encounters the operations. In symbolic, you would first declare the graph and then compile it, at which point in time the backend would go and optimize it, removing all redundant memory references. For example, here C isn't used in anywhere but D, so you don't need to keep that. So it removes and directly makes it one operation. It also parallelizes operations if they are independent of each other. If there is no data dependency, it can run them in parallel. You compile and then you pass the data, at which point in time is when the operations run in symbolic. To help work with symbol, we have a set of APIs called modules, where you create a graph and feed it to it. In this example, we are creating a fully connected layer followed by activation. Fully connected is nothing but it's to say each neuron is connected to all the neurons in the previous layer, and activation is performing some element-wise operation to add some non-linearity to the neural network. Finally, we have softmax here, which squashes all your output to probabilities in a classification case. And for module, you would directly feed that graph and bind the data shapes. This is when it allocates all the necessary temporary space for the model to execute. You initialize the parameters, that is the weights. And finally, you would pass to a fit routine by passing the iterator, which fetches data for you, and if it's for training, or you pass it to predict, which will give you predictions on a trained model. Let's look at a small demo. Here, you can import MXNet. It provides PyPI package, so it's very easy to install. You have three files for a pre-trained model. You have a symbol file that defines the graph. It's in JSON format. You have weights and a synset that maps classes to labels. We can see here that when we plot the graph, it's a very deep network. The network here in use is ResNet 18. It has many convolutional layers, pooling and activation. That's where you feed your data and look at the parameters now, which is nothing but floating point operation, floating point numbers that's stored in binary format. Synset, like I said, maps classes from your output to actual labels. Let's run a simple prediction on a single image. This is a very low resolution image, and you can see it somewhat looks like a ship. You see that it's three-dimensional. I told you it's a multidimensional array. You can see that with the shape operation as well. The three is the number of channels, which is RGB. Upon running prediction, you can see it nicely classifies with 60% confidence, close to as container ship or just a container vessel. MXNet also provides this symbolic, sometimes is harder to debug, so it provides this new set of APIs called Gluon, which is imperative, but it also optimizes, like I said before. It's very easy to understand for you, very easy to debug. You can create dynamic graphs. You can have if loops, while loops. This is important and useful in natural language processing. Performance is not lost, so you get the performance and the easy programmability. Okay, so far I covered a little bit of deep learning. It's just a tip of the iceberg. And we saw about MXNet framework. Let's see distributed inference and how to run that. When you have a large set to run inference on, you want to run them on multiple machines, right, in parallel. Obviously, you don't want to run on a single machine. So there are a few challenges to efficiently run distributed inference. The first one is you need a highly performant DL framework. Just to give you a perspective on the complexity, a simple 18-layer ResNet model, which is to do classification. ResNet is this model proposed by Microsoft researchers in 2015. ImageNet is a project that runs annual computations. They run computations to find the best algorithm that can do image classification and other related image tasks. So these guys won the first prize. They created a 152-layer deep network. And here I'm using an 18-layer. Even those need billions of floating point operations. So you need a very highly efficient deep learning framework. And you need a distributed cluster, somebody that can do resource management for your job scheduling, you know, making sure when if it fails, it's restarted, track those jobs, et cetera. And you need to have efficiently partition the data across clusters so that all the resources are very well used. You need a deep learning setup. If you were to use AWS, they provide a deep learning army. Otherwise, MXNet provides pip packages that can be easily installed on any of the machines, your existing Spark cluster, without any issues. Many of these looks very familiar and similar to large-scale data processing system. These are solved problems. We don't need to resolve again just because deep learning arrived, right? So we can use Spark, which supports multiple cluster managers. It works well with MXNet as well. And if you have lots of data in your Hadoop cluster, and you can use your existing tools and just try to make use of deep learning to find new insights into your data. Have a demo, small demo. For that, I'm using ImageNet trained ResNet 18 classifier. It's a shortened version, 18 layers instead of 152 layers. And then for demo, I'm using a publicly available data set. It's called C410. I'm using the test data set, which has 10,000 images. I'm showing you a demo of PySpark on EMR, but like I said, it can run anywhere. You can also use Scala. If your MXNet has a Scala APIs, you can use that if you're used to using Scala and with Spark. I'm showing in CPUs. GPUs are expensive. If you have to run it on cluster, it gets very expensive. But if you have so much data and want to get quicker inference done, so you can easily extend to GPUs as well. Let's look at how the pipeline looks. Here, my keys were on S3, but it was just for my easy demonstration instead of having a HDFS cluster always running. But you can easily use HDFS. You can store your data in HDFS as well. I take these keys and create a RDD. I don't want to distribute all the data across the cluster. You can access, like HDFS, S3 on all the machines. So I just create a RDD of all these keys and then partition it across the cluster by creating map partitions. On the executor, I fetch a batch of images instead of doing one at a time. Like I said, these are linear algebraic operations. Having another dimension or feeding it a batch is just another dimension in the tensor which can be parallelized. So I take a batch of images on each executor and feed that. I convert the image to a NumPy array. NumPy is a Python library that helps you to convert to numbers. And then you run predictions on it. You do it for every map partition and across all the executors. One thing to notice, I'll show you in the code next, that I initialize the model only once. For whatever reason, Spark doesn't give you an initialize routine on executors. So I'll show you how to do that. Finally, we'll collect the predictions. Let's look at some code. Here, I'm setting the number of cores to 1. By default, Spark creates 1 task per core. But in MXNet, it efficiently uses all the CPUs. So I'm restricting Spark to say that, OK, for just give me 1 task per executor. And I'm also creating map partitions here, where I download in each partition, I download a batch of images and load it and then run prediction, finally collecting that. This is on the driver. And on the executor, I told you that we don't want to load the model over and over again. It's kind of expensive when you have to load and bind and allocate all the memory. So what I did was, it seems to be very standard in Spark, where you create a singleton and just load it as a static class here once, and you just use that. Another thing to note here is that I'm using this, I'm importing this MXNet in the predict routine instead of at the top, which you do usually in Python. This causes a problem with PySpark. They use a pickle version called Cloud Pickle that doesn't understand this. It starts to serialize and deserialize the entire binary of MXNet and fails, saying that it contains C++ pointers that it cannot understand. So instead, what I did was install MXNet on all the nodes and just send the code in the block. So we don't have to serialize and deserialize all the libraries. Here I'm loading only once, like I said before. Let's see a small demo. Here I'm using a Spark cluster. You can use your own. It was easy for me to use EMR. Have a blog written about it, and I have code here for you to easily get started under AWS Labs, Deep Learning EMR. You can use that. That should work on any Spark cluster, except for a few environment variables. Okay, this is my Spark, oops, sorry. This is kind of, Yeah, it's restarted again. Shouldn't have touched PowerPoint. All right. Yeah, this is the Spark submit command. Still cloning. I recorded a video, so. Seems to exist already, so. We'll just go into that and call the submit the Spark job directly. Here, it's using YARN, and I'm disabling dynamic allocation because I don't want new executors to be spawned on the same instance. So I'm making sure that there is only one executor running. When I take that command and run, I'm giving the file locations of those models, and sending the file over, the Python files over to the executor on all the machines. I'm writing the output to a S3 bucket there. You can specify that, and or you can get the output onto the driver if you like. Submitting to application manager here, and okay, it's accepted, and we'll see how it looks. Okay, let's see here. It's a running job, and We'll see, there are 165 partitions. That's based on the number of batches I created. My batch size was 64, so 10,000 by 64 was 165 map partitions. And we can see here it tries to download only once the model files. That's the shape of my image, and 64 is what the size is. We can see the predictions already here. I'm printing the top five predictions for all those images. The one that I showed you, ship-like images, there are many others. I'll show you one that's already been done in history, and you can see that it was able to run in 4 minutes. I used a CPU instance called C4 8X, and it was able to efficiently use all the resources and just run the entire pipeline in about 4 minutes. So to summarize, I talked about a little bit about deep learning and why it matters these days, and phases of deep learning, a little bit about types of deep learning. I talked about Apache MXNet, and we saw MXNet and Spark, how to use them together. For the community, MXNet community, we released 1.3 with a lot of new features and improvements. We added a new language called Clojure. If you're a fan of that, you can use that. And we improved the APIs in Scala, many different things, improved RNN support in Gluon. Lots of our release notes was like 4 pages. So many new features getting added, lots more people coming in into the project. Right now, we are working on Java APIs. What we heard from customers or users is that usually they train with Python and they want to deploy models using a type-safe language like Java or Scala. We are working on a set of APIs first to solve the inference use case, and based on user asks, we are going to work on for training later. The community is fast evolving, definitely. I ask you to join hands to democratize AI. It's under Apache, so nobody controls. One vendor controls. You should come and check it out. Subscribe to our dev list. And I put some resources here. Apache/incubator MXNet is our GitHub repo. I wrote a blog about it. Have the sample code as well. And then I highly recommend checking out this gluon.mxnet.io. If you're new to deep learning, this gives you a very, it starts you with very low level concepts of deep learning, even mathematical concepts that are used in deep learning, like linear algebra and probability, you can see on the left side. And it takes all the way to developing state-of-the-art models. This is our website, mxnet.incubatorapache.org. We have many resources linked there as well. Have a 60-minute crash course for you to get started with MXNet if you already know deep learning. And thanks. Yeah, I can take some questions if you have. Yes.
The demo you showed earlier where you identified the container ship was interesting. But it seems like your model and your data set would only be good for telling the difference between a chainsaw and a container ship. If you wanted to identify any arbitrary object, you would need to train that model with an enormous amount of data. Is that right?
Partly right. You can take pre-trained models that we have all of these models are trained for image classification on ImageNet. What you can do is you can take a pre-trained model and you can do something called transfer learning. You can change the output layer to suit your own need. If you're finding different kind of cars, you can just change that layer and you can feed that new data to the model. So the amount of training actually reduces. You don't have to restart all the way from start.
Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't just image recognition,
Mm-hmm.
If I wanted to do some kind of text analysis or something that somebody had done before,
yeah.
That requires an enormous amount of work in order to build a model from scratch.
Actually, the way the models are built is you take a state-of-the-art paper and try to customize to your own use case. So what I didn't talk about, we'll talk in the afternoon, there is another session. MXNet provides you with toolkits called Gluon CV and Gluon NLP that comes with state-of-the-art models pre-trained for you on the data sets they were trained, and also gives you code that you can take it and customize. So you're not starting from scratch, you get the models. Yeah, for free, for you to download and, you know, do transfer learning, modify the network if you want. It comes with code as well. So even if you want to create your new one, it comes with standard set of data sets also. In NLP, for many of the word embeddings are already there. So you're not starting from scratch.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
Hi, so the examples you showed of supervised learning.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about data that's presented very differently, where you have to get a series of things in before you
do the problem? That's where frameworks like Spark shines, right? It provides you many different connectors that you can just hook to Kafka or, you know, Kinesis in AWS or many others. You can hook into them and just feed into, you can integrate MXNet and Spark together. One thing that we are looking into is training. Spark and MXNet can work for inference, I've seen that, but for training, it needs a different kind of scheduler, and Spark community is working on that already, and we plan to integrate at some point based on what the users ask.
Okay, but, my question wasn't so much about integrating into data sources, it's about the kind of network. The network that has to learn from looking at anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, there is something called Sockeye that folks in AWS has worked on that does machine translation for you. If you're asking about translation, you can use that. It's a matter of how you send your input and get the output. You need if you're asking for a network that can do translation kind of application, there are many of them, and MXNet already provides them. Did that answer your question? I can talk to you offline and to understand your use case more. And he can also help you. Yeah.
The reason I'm interested in this whole topic is not so much image recognition and stuff like that, but I'm more into the predictive maintenance, optimization, production flows. So I'm interested in something that's able to sort of gather information from telemetry data from industrial machines.
Mm-hmm. Is it like anomaly detection in data? Is it? I'm not an expert in that, but I can. I think it can help, and definitely I can talk to you offline and point you to the resources or people who can you can discuss with. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so some people, what they do is they capture the output and use that in their training loop to improve the weights. So it's not, I don't know of a mechanism where you will directly feed into the training loop, but what they do is at the end of the day or at the end of the week, they take what's the predicted output and see the percentage probability and use that as a reference to improve.
So it just dumps back into the
training. Yeah. Again, it's kind of like fine-tuning your training. You're not starting from scratch. What do you mean? It's just updating the weights, right? With your new data, it doesn't have to retrain from scratch. Yeah. Yes.
Have you benchmarked CPU and RAM computer utilization versus GPU utilization? How does that increase your ML learning and speed performance in comparison?
For the example, the demo I showed you, I benchmarked the memory utilization. It was mostly memory intensive than CPU intensive. I've not done that for GPUs, but for training we have some standard benchmarks, not in comparison to CPU memory versus GPU memory, but how it's scaling when you add more GPUs or when you add more machines. Yes? Like online learning?
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that. I can research and let you know. I'll talk to you offline after this. Yeah. Any other question? All right. We have another talk in the afternoon. We are going to talk about the various open source projects that we are working on around MXNet. It's not just one project, it's an ecosystem that we are building. I'll talk to you more about that in the afternoon. Thank you.